A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello there, happy Friday, and welcome to episode number 602 of Smart Podcast Trashy Books, or, you know, happy whatever day you're listening to this. I'm Sarah Wendell, and with me today is Jennifer Armentrout. We're going to talk about the books that she considers the foundation of her fantasy romance reading, and we take a long side trip into classic historical romances that we both love. Her newest book, Visions of Flesh and Blood, is out next week, so we're not only looking forward, but we're also looking back. Like way, way back. We talk about a series that she's paused and why, and what it means to update a book that doesn't age well. There's a lot of reminiscing, and I hope you enjoy this very meandering conversation as well as all of the recommendations. I would love to know what books you consider the foundations of your fantasy romance reading and under what genres they were listed when you found them way back in the day. Hello and thank you to our podcast Patreon community, and a special hello to Houston, who's one of our most recent members. If you have supported the show with a monthly pledge of any amount, thank you. You are keeping me going. You are making sure that every single episode has a transcript that is hand-compiled by Garlic Knitter, and you're making sure that the episodes are accessible to everyone. Patreon members get some nifty benefits. There are bonus episodes. There's a wonderful Discord. This year we did a Valentine's Day card exchange and it has been delightful. So if you would like to join, it would be wonderful to have you. Have a look at patreon.com/smartbitches. Support for this podcast comes from the new graphic novel, Age Matters. A hopeless romantic and a reclusive billionaire rewrite the rules of friendship, love, and work in a graphic novel version of the hit webtoon series, Age Matters. Age Matters follows 29-year-old Rose Choi as she decides to pick up her life after her ex-boyfriend cheats on her, then dumps her. In need of employment, she takes over her best friend's odd job to cook and deliver meals to a mysterious boss. You know where this is going. The boss turns out to be the 23-year-old CEO of Lime, Daniel Yoon. She finds him too abrasive, while he finds her too desperate, but they eventually learn to get along with each other and fall for each other. This book collects episodes 1 through 15 of the webtoon, which had over 3.6 million subscribers and more than 390 million reads. If you love addictive slow burn romance, then this is the book for you, and it is just in time for Valentine's Day. Publishers Weekly calls it charming and says it's got plenty of romantic heat. You can pick up your copy of Age Matters, Volume 1 by Angelicious now, and look for other print versions of your favorite hits from Webtoon, published by Webtoon Unscrolled, wherever books are sold. All right, you ready to get started? We're going to go back in time and forward in time, and we're going to talk about fantasy romance back in the day with Jennifer Armentrout. On with the podcast. What books do you consider like the foundations of fantasy romance that have influenced you as a reader and a writer? What is your like, okay, these are the ones that shaped me?
So I think this is actually a harder question to answer because I think fantasy romance, and for it, it's like, it's funny that we now have given that a new name. And I'm always like, guys, this has been a thing for
A very long time, but now we have a name for it.
It's like, yeah, this is not new. It's just now more accepted. Like that's the difference.
That was exactly my reaction too. Like, oh, yeah. We have a name for that, but that's been around for a while.
Yeah. Like, why are we renaming this? It's just that fantasy was always heavily dominated by, you know, male authors with main male characters. And, you know, that was what we know of fantasy, where, yeah. And also it's almost like fantasy was not allowed to have any type of, you know, happy ending or have romance that somehow made it less than, you know, having that, but it's always been there.
Always.
It's just always, it's been actually put into the paranormal category is where you usually found it. Or at one time, as you will know, urban fantasy.
Oh, yes.
It was what I think we call contemporary fantasy now. Because I don't think they call it that now. UF. And that's where you found it. It was always there. So for me, it's hard to say, to pick one book and say that's what shaped it. I mean, of course, you're going to have, like, you know, Sarah's book, Sarah Mass's, like A Court of Thorn and Roses, like that series. But for me, it also is the paranormal. Like, most of your fantasy actually relies very heavily on paranormal.
That's very true.
So a lot of just regular paranormal books is what inspired me. Plus, my favorite genre will always likely be historical romance. That is my go-to. That is my, like, when I'm working, that is when I'm reading. Usually I feel like you do see a little bit of that, or sometimes a lot of historical context in your fantasy, where you could see, I could honestly see historical authors easily making that jump.
Oh, for sure. Because a lot of fantasy requires very rigid social structures, very rigid movement between classes. And the fantasy, you have to have a history to make the world building accurate. I totally agree.
And too, it's like you're also having authors who are able to write in a world that they do not live in. So it's like, and that is difficult, because when you're writing contemporary, you have the contemporary world, you have the world that you can rely back on.
Yeah.
But when you're creating something that took place 100, 300 years ago, or something that doesn't exist, you're having to build that in a way that people can see that and visualize it usually in their head. And so I think historical authors would probably really kick ass at fantasy. But I think for me, it was paranormal. It was paranormal from when I was a teen, reading L.J. Smith, like, you know, all the way from that, reading Joanna Lindsay. And just that is really what shaped my love of that type of world and having the paranormal element. Because you do see in most of your fantasies, there are paranormal elements that are in them, whether it's the type of the beings that you're dealing with or special abilities. These books existed. They always did. They were just called paranormal.
Yep.
At one time, they were just looped because you couldn't have romance in a fantasy.
Ooh.
So that's why. Like, this is not new. No. You just couldn't have it. Like, it was just no go. Once your book went to a bookstore, they saw it was written by someone who looks like they may have a lady name, and it had romance, and you went immediately into paranormal, and 9 times out of 10, they also put you into young adult.
Yep. Yeah. And there was this weird overlap, right?
Yep. So now they don't do that anymore. So that's why you now have this genre, I guess.
It's so interesting to have been in this industry for so long, and then you see a trend come back and you're like, oh, but we've did this before.
Yeah.
Like, when I started Smart Bitches in 2005, paranormal was it. It was vampires and werewolves all the way down. And then you had the urban fantasy, and you knew it was urban fantasy because there was a girl on the cover with leather pants and the studded belt.
A dagger or gun. In her hands.
And there was that one belt. They all wore the same belt with the metal square studs. It was the urban fantasy.
And there was a city behind them.
Yes. And it was
pretty
dark.
Sure, like, one of my books has a cover just like that.
Exactly. And that was it. And everyone was hot for vampires and werewolves, and that's what was selling.
Since you've been doing this longer than I have, so I'm going to test my theory on you. My theory is that whenever the real world gets too real, like whenever there's too much going on in the real world, whether it's like a horrific disaster that happens, economic strife, anything like that, you find that readers then will tend to really want true escapism.
Yeah.
They want the fantasies. They want the vampires, the werewolves, the fae, the historical times. They don't want really anything that resembles their life at that moment.
Yep.
And then when things are really good, when things are, you know, you look at towards your late 2000s, right? When the economy is looking good for the most part. I mean, I don't know. There were some moments there too with the economy, but you know, overall, like things are starting to look good. Things are starting to improve. You start to see a swing back towards contemporary.
Yep.
That is my theory that is when you see, that is how you can do your trends. Look at the world you're currently in. And that can almost guarantee to tell you what is going to trend. And also understanding that, and if I could ever give like a message to any author, just because something's trending does not mean the opposite is no longer read. It's like people always still look for this. It's just what's going to happen is you're going to have outliers, right?
Yep.
That are going to go through the roof, that are going to be like the biggest selling books at all time. And so then you're going to think, oh my God, everybody's got to be writing contemporary. Everybody's got to be writing fantasy. No, it's just these books.
Yep.
And then they're going to raise more books like them, but people are still looking for the other type.
It's just not the most popular thing. And I had a campaign with Dear Author called Save the Contemporary. I think contemporary is fine right now. I think it's been saved. It's good. We're good. Yep.
And also when you said, it's like when you said Dear Author, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm having a flashback, like in a good way to like it's just like so many, it's like you realize how long you've been doing this.
You're like, oh my gosh,
Dear Author. And I'm trying, you know, there's just so many blogs that, oh my gosh, like I just think back sometimes and I'm like, oh man.
The fact that I'm still around every year, like every year when I file my taxes and I file my annual report with the state, I'm like, still here. Still going, just paid my hosting.
You know, you've also adapted, like, you know what I mean? Like you've seen that, like doing like the podcast and things like that, doing Patreon, like things were changing. Like, and I think that, you know, is one of the main, you know, not main, but helps when you're doing that. But yeah, that is my theory is that you see, when you look around you, that's when you see, when you start seeing these upticks in certain genres. And
yes. And that homogeny is the enemy and conforming is the enemy. And you still have individuals who form groups to overtake a negative authority. Like that is a consistent theme, but you see more of it in a much more dramatic and massive way immediately following scary stuff. And it's also, it's really hard to write contemporary romance, I think, right now, because do you include COVID or do you not?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I was writing, I had this other series that's a sci-fi series. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, gearing up, like, three of the books came out in it. And I was introducing, like, it has to do with, it was a spinoff from my Lux series. And so it had to do with like aliens and basically like the world, you know, we've been experimenting on them, creating like, you know, serums and stuff to improve humans, and all started from someplace good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because these aliens in my series, they didn't get sick. And so it all started from a good place.
This is The Darkest Star, right? The origin series?
Yeah, those with Tor, yeah. And it all started from like this good place of these good, because, you know, I feel like some of the worst evils started from somebody in there, not everybody, because there's some people I just believe are just born bad. But then there is, you know, but like it is, but usually it starts from one little speckle of good. Like I want to eradicate cancer or something like in my world, and that had built. And, but then it just capitalism.
Yep.
It's, which came in ultimately and was like, but we can use this from the military. We can create soldiers out of this. And so things had spiraled in there, but one of the things that they were doing basically is like, you know, I kind of modeled it after real of like history, like when, some of the things that have always like destabilizes countries, which always makes them better for takeovers or a new regime to rise from that is destabilization. And one of the biggest destabilizers are usually natural events. So if you can't create weather events, the next best thing was like a pandemic. So in that series, they manufactured a virus, a flu. And basically, if you had gotten the flu vaccine, there was something, Yeah, I hate it. And again, I don't believe it. I don't believe this at all.
I have chills now because I'm like, yep, yeah. Mm-hmm, yep. Yeah, like,
I don't believe in this, but this is why I created that. If you had gotten the flu vaccine, there's something in the flu vaccine that basically would deter, like, would see how it reacted in your body. And if you survived that, like, if you, some people it would have made okay. Other people, once they released this virus, it would have killed them.
Oh boy.
And basically they were weeding out the weakest, but at the same time, creating a destabilizing event.
Yep.
For the, these, like, the, you know, oh God, like this, again, this, I don't believe this. I mean, but creating, like, the really, like, you know, the shadow government, the people who in my world who do run things to finally step in and take control. And so the series was leading up to that. It was already written pre-2020. And then COVID happened. And it was the thing was, it was eerie because some of the things that was happening in the beginning had already happened in the book, and where it was like these pockets of things you were starting to hear about, and then people downplaying it. And then other people being like, no, something, they wouldn't shut down an entire apartment building. Like, something bad is happening. And it made it. And I still have been unable to finish that series.
Like, of course
I have to, because I don't feel comfortable. Because the final book would have been the fallout, because the virus had already been released. And of course, in my book, the virus was obviously much more deadlier. But I didn't feel right.
Like, no, you know, I completely understand.
And like, my husband's grandfather passed away from it. So, you know, we have, you know, obviously a very close family member who had died from it. And it just didn't feel. I mean, like, even though I know I'm not, I created this before this happened.
Yeah.
But you know, I based it off like the Spanish influenza. Like, and the worst part is, oh my God, like, even in the beginning, oh gosh, before COVID, I had one of the doctors who was doing RNA.
No. Oh my gosh.
So I know like a stupid amount about viruses and actually how viruses, you know, because she, before the alien invasion happened in the previous series, she worked in biochemistry, because you know how they're actually creating viruses to target cancers, like,
yes.
they're creating in like nanotechnology basically. Yes. And so it was like all this stuff. I'm just like, am I psychic? I don't know what's happening. I'm like, cause this is so weird, but it's because that technology and a lot of stuff has always been there.
Yep.
But it never got used. Like, you know, they couldn't get the funding off the ground for RNA technology. And, you know, everybody's freaking out about that. It's like, guys, that's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah.
They've been working on that stuff for decades.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that it's expensive to do. And, you know, and so, but yeah, I just have to, like, yeah, I felt like I had to kind of basically rewrite the plot somehow. Like, because I was like, I can't do it this way. Because also, I don't want, because I wrote this way with like the flu vaccine and not really thinking anything about it or thinking, this is so, you know, I'm so, you know, this is going to be so creepy. But now knowing that there is so much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Misinformation about vaccines out there.
Yes.
Now. Even though I'm writing completely made up shit.
Yes.
I don't want to add to that. Nope. I don't want to add to that. I don't want people to think that I believe that. Like, yeah. So it became this like, what is it? Realer than fiction moment of how do I back myself now out of this?
Yep.
How do I? And Tor has been amazing because even my editor there at that time was like, what the hell? Like, you know, it was like we were, because she saw like the synopsis too, and she like completely, she was like, we can't do this right now.
No.
Like, we can't.
No,
because I was like, I don't feel right doing this. Like, I don't feel right continuing down that path, knowing that it's still here. People are still dying. A lot of people are still dying from it. Nurses and doctors and first responders are still very traumatized.
Yeah.
What they've had to do and still having to see and do. And
this wasn't fantasy anymore. This wasn't fiction anymore.
So I'm still trying to figure out how to close that out without exploring it. But that was, we went way off track there, but that's like probably one of my most bizarre writing moments I think I've ever had, where it's like, I'm literally writing something or have written something that's coming true. And yep. it's like, if you ever watched Veep.
Yes. Oh my God.
I can't even tell you how many times I was like, wait a minute. Didn't that happen in Veep 2 years ago?
Yeah. Like, who's writing this season?
It was like, wait a minute. Like, that happened.
And yet it fits with what we've been talking about, that everything comes back. Everything returns. I call it the Bruce Springsteen theory of publishing. Everything dies, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. We went through this same pattern of behavior with the Spanish flu. We went through the same, oh no, you can't do that. There was always a anti-movement towards treatment and public health at that time, just like there is now. Anti-vaxxers have always been around. They just got more popular and connected over social media and became louder. But that has always been a subset of society. And now everything that has happened before will happen again. And so you were real close with that prediction there. I'm assuming you play the lottery often.
I do not, which I feel like because you know what the other funny thing is, it was just so hilarious. And this kind of went viral, like during the early stages of the pandemic, like this actual part of one of my older books, like people, like it just took off in life of its own was, and again, I don't believe this. No. I'm not the person to do this, but I'm like, people really won't do this. So in the Lux series, the original series of this world, the aliens, spoiler alert, whatever, eventually invade. Like the rest of, because there's aliens already here. They've been hiding. But then the rest of them are like, well, we're coming. We're going to make this bitch our home. Yep. Like, so they're coming. And they're not exactly friendly. And so people are panicking, right? So the main character, Katie, they're going to the grocery store. And she's looking around like chaos everywhere. She realizes that there is toilet paper. And so I have her say something like, well, I know the first thing I'll be buying is toilet paper. Me, no. The first thing I'm going to be buying is shit like water, like, you know, like, but also like, whatever. But then, and this book came out like 2015, 2016, probably years later, people had got that little bit of dialogue and it just went like, and I was like, oh my God. It's like, again, the same world. Like, I was like, I don't, that's not my fault.
Nope.
To hear this, but
you're just writing human nature.
Yeah,
accurately predicting what humans will do.
Because it is kind of a running thing when you think about, oh God, like when you're watching like, you know, post-apocalyptic shows, you're like, do they have toilet paper?
Do they have tampons? What do you do for maxi pads?
Right. I'm always wondering that. I'm like, are you like, I do like The Last of Us. And on
yes,
that they actually showed her
using like, a cup.
Yeah. Grab that. The cup. That was funny because she was just like, it's like, yeah. Like learning about that. But I do like that because it's something that always kind of crossed my mind about that. And why does everybody in a post-apocalyptic TV show have amazing white teeth?
What is with that?
Like, come on, put some yellow on their teeth, people. Like, that just takes me out. When I see that, I'm just like, why are their teeth whiter than mine?
Well, the apocalypse.
There's supposed to be zombies everywhere.
The apocalypse has spared the dentistry industry, specifically the dentists that have teeth whitening components to their practice.
But then maybe you could spin it like they're eating less sugar now. So they're having
less processed foods. Who knows?
That's just the weird thing I think about sometimes when you are writing. It's like, you don't know like how much of it can come true.
Yes. Now, you mentioned that you love Joanna Lindsay. I also love Joanna Lindsay. Do you have a favorite Joanna Lindsay that you reread a lot?
Oh gosh, I know. And many of these did not age well.
No, but the one that I love the most has aged terribly. Wait till I tell you about it.
I think mine, God, is probably Hearts of Flame.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's the one. That's the one of Kirsten, right? She's a Viking who, like, because I get some of them confused because she had a bunch of those families. Like, one is the Conqueror and the Rose, I think, or the Wolf and the Rose.
Yeah.
Or the Conqueror. I'm thinking of the one, I think.
Yep, that's Hearts of Flame. Beautiful of Flame, and yeah. Defiant Kirsten.
Oh God, it's so bad. I mean, like, in a way of holding up to, you know, of today's, like, there's some stuff in there, but I don't know. I just loved it. I was reading Joanna Lindsay when I was 12 and 13.
Yep.
Because we didn't have young adult like they do now. We had basically R.L. Stine, Christopher Pike, and a few other, right, that you could read. And it wasn't that much. You would go into Walden Books. It would just be like one shelf,
yeah,
like one row of books. And that's
unless
it.
You wanted to read like Sweet Dreams and Sweet Valley High.
Yeah.
Which was soap opera books.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I was reading higher than, you know, what I was should have been reading. But my mom, I mean, she was a huge proponent of reading, and she didn't care that I was reading it. So, I mean, and you know, I always tell people, it's like, look, I was reading Joanna Lindsay at 12 years old. I turned out fine. Yep. Like, you know, I may have had a little bit higher than normal expectations for sex, you know, and then was like, oh, it's not really like that, where you're like soaring through the clouds and, you know, stuff like that. But like, it's that Hearts of Flame, that God, there's so many. Brenda Joyce is another one. And I always say her name wrong. Gillian Foley. G-A-L-E-A-N.
Galen Foley?
Galen, yes.
That's how I've always said it in my head. Galen Foley, yeah.
Oh my gosh, the Duke, the Lord Ice, the Lord of Fire. Oh my God, they're my favorite.
That was my first, I think Galen Foley was the first book I ever read with a princess falling in love with her bodyguard. And I was too young to be reading that, but I just remember being like, oh my word.
And there's a couple of, like, there's really, like, historicals that really go back into time.
Oh, yeah.
It does have fantasy vibes to us, right?
They really
because
do.
Because we can't even comprehend a world like that now, right? Where you actually have legitimate knights running amok and you got all this stuff going on. You see a lot of that in fantasy now. And that always kind of seems like a fantasy vibe to me. What was your favorite, Joanna Lindsay?
It's so problematic. It is so deeply problematic. And I reread it, and there's a part of me that reads it and goes, oh my God, oh God. And there's a part of me that's like, yes. Okay. So my favorite Joanna Lindsay that I can reread anytime and it works every time is Silver Angel.
Okay. So what was the character's name? I know I've read it. I just have to always like, they kind of blur together.
Afterwards. Oh, they do. They do. Because I mean, especially if you read Bertrice Small, which has been called fucking through history books. Yeah. Bertrice Small was here to take you to the Tudor era of the world where everyone was having good sex and nobody had body hair. It was pretty wild.
But yeah, like, it's like, guys, let's not talk about the fact that they only could bathing at that time was considered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you remember, think about like a knight in shining armor. When the heroine goes back in time in A Knight in Shining Armor, she invents a shower. And cleans her teeth. I'm like, go ahead, girl. So Silver Angel. Whew. Okay, Silver Angel. The heroine's name was Chantal. And the original cover was this guy on top of her. And her hair is just spilling over.
Yeah, I could see the cover.
Oh, yeah. And she's, okay, so there's twins. And one of them is a sheik. I've just wandered straight into problematic territory. And she is kidnapped and sold into slavery. But it's
the guy who's pretending to be the brother, right?
Right, is his secret twin who happens to be an English lord. Of course he is.
I do like that one too.
So he's pretending to be the sheik, but he really likes her, but he's got to shtup all the other wives or they're going to get mad and he can't do it because he loves her. And there's a scene where all of the eunuchs like depilate her, like they pluck all her body hair. Yeah.
I read this. I mean, I haven't read this one in a long time, but that scene has stuck with me and actually has inspired a scene in Fall of Ra and Ruin.
No, get out of town.
Yeah. And she has to be, you know, where she says, I've already been waxed, but she's being bathed, prepared. That scene has stuck in the back of my head.
No!
All of these years.
Oh,
because
my God.
I think that probably is one of the first times I read, right? When that was even shown, right? Because it was really never discussed. Like body hair was never discussed.
No.
And it was kind of like this, you know, suddenly being presented with this idea that there were different cultures to have these different views, obviously, on body hair, right?
Yeah.
Keep in mind, when we was reading this, you didn't have the internet.
No.
Like, what was this? But yeah, I know exactly what scene, because I remember being like, what?
And I remember reading that, and I have dark hair and I have fair skin. So I'm a hairy person. Yeah. And I'd be like, well, how come all the heroines in history never have body hair? Her smooth legs? How come her legs are smooth and mine aren't? And they all have flat stomachs and they all have perfect teeth and long legs. And I was like, well, something's wrong with me. Silver Angel is one of like, it just imprinted on my soul in a number of ways. That book is, it is so problematic on so many levels.
Most of them are.
They are. God. And yet I reread them and I'm like, yep, suddenly I'm 12 years old and I know I should not be reading this book.
Yeah. And it's that book, I do remember as soon as you said that, I was like, there were two brothers.
Yes.
And then one was hiding, you know, basically pretending to be the other. But they're, oh my gosh, like there were, I think Joanna Lindsay also had one with one of the czars of Russia, like where he just pretty much like just picked her up off the street and like kidnapped her. Like it was one of the princes. I think that was Lindsay. And that may have been one of the other ones. But again, with the things like nowadays where you're like, oh, God.
Like, oh, yeah.
But I will die on the hill. I'm sorry. I will die on the hill that those types of books are not causing men to go out there and kidnap women. You know, they are not causing that.
No.
And they're not causing women to think it's okay for that to happen.
No.
It's fantasy because coming from a psychological standpoint, women do have those fantasies.
Oh, men absolutely. It is a way of negotiating the peril that is in real life.
Yeah. Then there are the other stuff in there that are really
like, well, this is super racist. It's so racist. And all of the chic harem historicals, there were so many, right?
Yeah. Cause there's another one that's popping into my head and I can't think which one it was where she was hiding because they would have like, I think these kind of reminds you of the stuff that you see at when you do confession at Catholic places where they have like these screens that you can kind of like see through a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had like there's another one. I can't think of what it is. It's stuck in my head that like the main wife was trying to, and that may have been Silver Angel actually, was trying to kill her.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a jealous woman who's very angry. And she does not realize that the hero is not her husband, that he's in hiding. And, you know, how are they twins? How are they?
You know, sciences didn't exist then.
Joanna Lindsay just wrote magic, right? Like it was just.
You didn't question it. You just bought in. And, you know, there was one of the I think it's one of Foley's books where, they get to the point where it's a lot of the what's it called? I'm gonna say it wrong, like the Western Spice East India Company.
Oh, the Dutch East India.
Oh, yeah, which is that's another thing that you really don't learn about in school. And you know, that oh my god.
Yeah, Galen Foley wrote a whole trilogy, the Spice trilogy.
Yeah, yeah. And there was one of the books, and I don't think it was a part of that one. I think it may have been like, it was a part of the main series, that she had, but it could have been one of the books that spun off into that series, like mm-hmm. showing them. And I will say there was one of them where she was probably the first one I read that actually handled it like a bit realistically, where it was not showing the English, the French in good lights or the Dutch at all. Like it was showing, and it didn't have like the white savior undertone in it either. It was something that she had it actually shown kind of in the background happening.
Yeah.
That, you know, and having the main characters realize that this is not okay. You know, that we're doing, but that is another book that stuck in my head because again, it's not something they covered in school, like what this actually did and what this meant for people and the colonization that came from it. And yeah.
And that's happening now with legislators determining what can and cannot be taught about actual history.
Yeah.
It's wild, right? Yeah. And you're so right that when you read these older historicals, they read like fantasy novels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you see that fantasy reflected in reality, it is so jarring.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And there has been some books that I'm not going to say the author's name, but there was one of them, because I'm not sure if I'm correct. I'm not sure if it's the book I'm thinking of, but there was a contemporary book that was written in the late 70s, early 80s that I had read ages ago and really, really liked. And then I picked it up again a couple years ago and read it. Mm-hmm. And stuff that was in it, the homophobic, the blatant racist undertones mm-hmm. that you, like, I did not even catch, like, you know. And then I will say I'm glad I read it, because I'm glad I read it then and I'm glad I read it now, because it helped me also realize that how blind is the best word I could think of, that a lot of us are, if we don't live that life, if we haven't experienced that, mm-hmm. that we are what's right in front of us. And I mean, I remember reading it and just being shocked, like, again, and then realizing no one has even updated this. Like, and I'm sorry, it's pretty, like, I know a lot of people have their feelings about that, but this is so bad that if I was the author, I'd be like, oh my God, we need to update this file.
Yes.
Because none of it pertained to the plot. None of it mattered. If you can remove it from the book and it does not change the book.
Yep.
You'll remove it, right?
I have the same feelings about The Grand Sophie by Georgette Heyer. There's one chapter where she goes to a Jewish moneylender and it is just, this is the anti-Semitism chapter. Here it is. And I'm like, and people will ask me, like, you know, which Heyers do you love? And I mean, okay, first of all, there are some abridged Heyers narrated by Richard Armitage, and I can listen to those anytime because, wow, ooh, he's good at books. But if someone asks me about that book, I'm like, when you get to the chapter and she's going to the money, you can just skip it. Just skip to the next chapter. It does nothing to the story. There's nothing important to the plot. It's just, I'm going to put the anti-Semitism chapter here. And it's like, but it doesn't do anything except be racist. Like, that's the whole point.
When you look at our generation, especially, and older, this stuff was on TV.
Oh, it was everywhere.
Everywhere. Nobody questioned it. And that doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it right. But what it did is it helped put in a lot of this unconscious bias into people that they do not realize they have. They aren't necessarily willing to confront it sometimes.
No.
To acknowledge that, yeah, you're not actively discriminatory. You're not actively racist. You're not actively biased. However,
you
have beliefs that were put into you because everybody was showing it.
It was in the atmosphere. It's like, it was like a palmolive. You were soaking in it.
I mean, that's where the whole thing, the whole phrase of that didn't age well came from.
Yep.
Basically, is realizing things that we accepted
and did not question
was not okay.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and that's one thing that it's like, you think about what reading has done for people. It's like, you realize that sometimes wow. Like you learn what, I mean, I even look about like, right, having written over 10 years now, there are things that I put in my books 10 years ago that I've had removed from my books now, that I've actually gone back, asked the publishers, and they've always been amazing with doing that. Like, and honestly, I can tell you right now that I don't think this is a secret. A lot of the publishers are actively doing sensitivity reads on their backlists.
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah.
I have heard that.
And they're pulling, and you know, and ultimately they do leave it up to the author. They leave it up to the author. No. I mean, at least publishers I work with, if you want to change this or not. And, you know, and there's been times where there'd be things that I may not understand. Like, but then I realized, wait a minute, Jen, I am not the person who gets to decide that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I may not be seeing what somebody else may be seeing.
Yeah. That's like, not your bruise.
Yeah.
No one's pushing on that bruise on you.
And again, and especially in 9 times out of 10, none of this stuff affects the plot, the character development. These are just things that inherently were in the backs of our minds that we never thought was a problem. And one of the best examples I can give for myself personally was in one of my books, the character made a comment, you're acting like Rain Man. You know, that's what I had in the book. So, and again, I was born in the 80s. The Dustin Hoffman, I think, played that character.
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman was Rain Man. That movie was massive, absolutely massive.
Tom Cruise and him. And he was never diagnosed. There was never a diagnosis for him, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, apparently, as we get older, I think people have realized he probably was autistic, Dustin Hoffman's character.
Yeah, certainly neurodivergent in some way.
Yeah, some way. And
we didn't even have that word back then, I don't think.
No. We just lumped all the neurodivergence into one group. Yeah. they were just one group. And a lot of that, and again, that's another hill I'll die on. Like, some of them shouldn't even be underneath mental illness brackets.
Agree.
Because they are totally, these are totally different things. But I wrote that not even thinking. And then, you know, X amount of time later, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like, you know, a reader had actually brought it up. And it took a moment for me to understand, like, okay, that was bad. And again, it's like, there was no ill intention on my part. Right. But it was realizing, okay, that's a misstep. That's something I need to fix. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and going back and having all the old files, like, updated to remove it. And there's things like that, that I think that people just, it's, you know, it's human nature to always be defensive. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's the human nature to come off on a defense. But lots of times, the whole thing, when I removed that, it didn't change anything. It was unnecessary.
It didn't change the book at all.
Other than it's going to do less harm to people.
Yeah. And, you know, when you know better, one way in which you do better is to update things that you may have done wrong and make it and be like, hey. And I mean, you see that on like television shows. Like, you'll see old reruns on Disney and they'll put, or on streaming services, and they'll put like a placard, please understand that this cartoon reflects views of that time and they are not okay. And it's like, everyone has to figure out how to negotiate their work, right?
Yeah. And it's, and you know, and I think that people always like, when they say, oh, well, people being too sensitive. It's mm-hmm. It's not being too sensitive.
No, it's being caring. Sorry, that's a problem.
I really think that we probably are not sensitive enough to other people's needs. See, that is actual the reality. But I do think with writing, and that's one thing too, with romance, there is so much you learn from it that has nothing to really to do sometimes with the romance aspect or not, but it's because romance is one of the genres that creates such realistic characters.
Absolutely true.
Whether it's
all character work,
fantasy. Yes. It's all. And it's like, you know, you can be reading a fantasy and forget that you're in a fantasy. You can be reading a paranormal and forget that you're in the paranormal. And I think that it does so much in terms of exposing you to other beliefs, mm-hmm. or sometimes realizing, wait a minute, if I have a problem with this happening in this book and this is fake, then I should maybe have a problem with the way we treat refugees in the real world.
You don't like, say.
So, yeah. And so it's, I think that is what, that's the power of these types of books. And I think it is often, often, unfortunately forgotten by media all the time.
All the time.
That's the power of these books, is that people are being exposed to things and learning while they're reading something that also makes them feel good. And people tend to learn and change that way
than they do
any other ways. And it's the power of those books.
That is fabulous. Thank you so much for doing this. It has been such a delight. I had such a good time. And I love that we totally vibe on the same level of, yeah, it's a problem, but I still love it.
I don't even like calling them your guilty reads, but I do think they are probably the guilty. It's but here's the thing. I think that you can read it.
Yes, you have two minds while you're reading.
And you know what's wrong. And honestly, when you're reading stuff like that at that young of age, it does help you recognize in real life when it's wrong, like earlier probably, and more easier than some people, because you have been exposed to things that you may yes. never have been exposed to in your town growing up. Like, but you've seen it in, you know, or read it. So I do think
yes,
they serve their purpose.
Empathy is never wasted. And romances are all about empathy. Empathy is never wasted. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. I will link to all of the books that we talk about in this episode. There were many. And I'm really curious, do you have a favorite deeply problematic Joanna Lindsay novel? Do you have a historical that you love and can read with two minds at the same time? Your present brain going, oh, and your past brain going, oh yeah, it still works on me. I know I'm not alone in that. I would love to know what your foundational historical romance and fantasy romance titles are. It would be so cool to know which ones got you started or which ones you look back on and go, oh wait, yeah, romanticy. It's been here a while. I always end with a bad joke. This week's joke comes from J.F. Hobbit through our Valentine's Day card exchange. What did they call sunrise in prehistoric times? Give up. What did they call sunrise in prehistoric times? Megalodon. One thing I love online is when people post pictures of the sunrise from different parts of the world. So I'm going to just tag them all. Megalodon. Thank you, J.F. Hobbit. And thank you so much for listening. It is really an honor to keep you company. On behalf of everyone here, we wish you the very best of reading. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back here next week. Smart Podcast Trashy Books is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.